Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 617, titled Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on November 4th of the year 2007. With this program, which is, as the title obviously states directly, is an update or supplement to other previously covered stories or miscellaneous presentations of articles relevant to the general body of research presented on this broadcast. This is, like so many of the programs, a program that will be much better appreciated if listeners use the tremendous amount of material that's available on the web, both in the audio files on Spitfire and WFMU's websites, and also on the printed files available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and linked websites. So please do take advantage of that huge amount of information, including literally a mini library of old anti-fascist books from the 30s, 40s, and early 50s that will give you an awfully good understanding of a lot of the stuff that I talk about on this program. Now, speaking of things that I speak about on this program, I've done a couple of programs in the last 7 or 8 months called The Socialism of Fools, dealing with anti-Semitism. A social critic in the early 20th century in Europe termed anti-Semitism, quote, the socialism of fools. And anti-Semitism has been coming to, well, it's been around a long time, obviously, but it has been gaining a new favor and a new virulence behind a number of different things, including the disastrous war in Iraq and some of the negative fallout of the petroleum politics, or as early 20th century observers termed it, oleaginous diplomacy, basically, the politics deriving from what they call in Texas the aw business. And with two oil men from Texas being respectively president and vice president of the United States, the oil business is front and center. And frankly, so it is with the average American as well. And ultimately, somebody and something has to pay the price. The environment is paying the price. A lot of people are paying the price. And ultimately, for all of its many shortcomings, Israel is going to wind up paying the price as well, not for its shortcomings, but for the shortcomings of a whole lot of people. In fact, the human race, which is committing suicide at various degrees, at various rates of speed, as a result of its addiction to petroleum, and whether we pollute ourselves to death, or whether some of the conflagrations that threaten in the Middle East go nuclear or WMD, we may very well wind up wiping ourselves out. The betting in this quarter is that certainly Israel and probably a lot of the people around it will be wiped out as this situation disintegrates. But in those programs, in the broadcasts called The Socialism of Fools, we have noted the virulence and seeming, if not omnipresent, certainly the growing commonality of that sort of thinking, or lack perhaps of thinking. A new one to me was carried in this particular article. It's on a website which will be annotated in the description for this program, for the Record 617. This particular theory basically blames the growth of Islamic fundamentalist states on the international Jewish conspiracy, so to speak. We're going to talk about a particular book called The Children of Moses, which has grown in favor in certain militant circles in Turkey, but these are circles that are sort of secular pan-Turkist and are opposed to the Islamist government of Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan, or the moderate Islamist government of Tayyip Erdogan. As we've seen in some recent broadcasts, there are in fact some links, some very direct links, between some of the Islamist milieu of the party of which Erdogan is the head, and the Bank al-Taqwa milieu, which is anything but moderate. But the relatively moderate Islamist government or regime of Erdogan, currently in power in Turkey, is very much at loggerheads with elements in the military and elements which reflect the traditional secular viewpoint of Kemal Ataturk and those who replaced the Ottomans at the end of World War I. We spoke about them and how they very successfully played off the rights to oil-rich parts of the former Ottoman Empire with the victorious powers in World War I in exchange for those victorious powers overlooking the Turkish genocide against the Armenians. This has recently become a hot issue again after a House subcommittee passed a resolution recognizing the Turkish campaign against the Armenians as genocide, and then that in turn has been shelved in recognition of the obvious necessity of getting some Turkish cooperation vis-a-vis the mess in Iraq and the fact that the Leninist PKK party in newly established Kurdistan, a de facto autonomous Kurdish region of Iraq, that from that territory there have been Kurdish rebels attacking the Turkish army and attacking Turkish troops, and now the Turkish government is threatening to counterattack, which threatens to make everything that much worse in the Middle East. As all of this goes on, as I've said before, keep an eye on who's zooming who and watch what watch the price of oil, regardless of who is waving weapons or actually shooting them at who. But one of the interesting things is that within the apparently secular pan-Turkist circles within the army that are opposed to the Islamists, there is nonetheless a mode of thinking which is not only virulently anti-Semitic and quasi-Nazi, but which blames the growth of Islamism not only in Turkey, but elsewhere in the Muslim world on the international Zionist conspiracy, which, according to this mode of thinking or non-thinking, is spreading Islamism in order to weaken the Muslim world or some such thing. I would be interested to hear from knowledgeable members of the listening audience. It is not clear to me if pan-Turkism as a doctrine is inherently hostile to Islamism or whether there are secular pan-Turkists who are opposed to Islam and also pan-Turkists per se who are pro-Islamic. I believe that there are both, but I'd be interested to hear about the stance of doctrinaire pan-Turkists and, for example, the New Movement Party or New Action Party, of which the Grey Wolves were the youth branch. I'd be interested to hear from a knowledgeable listener about their attitude toward Islamism per se. But in any event, among some of the more militant elements of the Turkish military, there has been the ultimate in anti-Semitic conspiracy theory has emerged, namely that the international Zionist conspiracy is promoting Islamism and that Islamist regimes and networks are basically being promoted by the Zionists. This particular article is called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, Turkish Style, subtitled The Book The Children of Moses, which has become a bestseller in Turkey, accuses international Zionism of a conspiracy to strengthen the power of the Islamicists in the country. The article is by Ran Porat, P-O-R-A-T. It's from October 11th of 2007, and it reads, "A book resembling the Protocols of the Elders of Zion has become a bestseller in Turkey. What makes this book so special is that the blood libel against the Jews takes on a new twist. The Washington Post reported the story. The book is called The Children of Moses. Its cover shows Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan inside a Star of David. Reporter Mustafa Akyol, A-K-Y-O-L, writes that this is the first in a series of four volumes. The book argues that Erdogan and his conservative allies in the pro-Islamic party are in fact crypto-Jews with secret ties to the conspiratorial forces of Global Zionism, unquote. The book is not a rarity. Copies are on display in bookshops on Independence Avenue or Istiklal, in the secular part of Istanbul, and in Turkey's international airport. They are displayed alongside a Turkish book with an international reputation by Pamuk Orhan. The publishers claim that over 520,000 copies, an astonishing figure, have been sold since it came out earlier in the year. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion blamed international Jewry for destroying both Tsarist Russia and communism, as well as for the capitalist system. But this is the first time Jews have been blamed, of all things, for setting up an Islamic state. Most ironically, the book portrays Israel as allied with the Islamic Justice and Development Party, or AKP. That, by the way, is the party that's aligned with elements associated with the Bank al-Taqwa and the Ahmed Huber. The author, continuing with the article, the author, Ergun Poyraz, is a self-declared Kemalist, i.e. a follower of Kemal Atatürk, who founded modern Turkey in 1923. Quote, Zionism has decided to turn Turkey from its secular path and make it a moderate Islamic republic, unquote, Poyraz maintains in all seriousness, offering no support for his arguments, which are not documented and have no factual backing. A clear case of anti-Semitism does not spring from virgin soil. Last February saw the exposure of a fascist group calling itself the Union of Patriotic Forces, led by retired Colonel Karadeg Fikri. The group's secret oath included the words, I am of pure Turkish blood, and there is no Jewish convert in my lineage, unquote. Its members promised to kill or be killed, unquote, so that the Turkish nation will rule the world, unquote. And the roots, the fascist roots and political associations of the pan-Turkist movement per se is a subject we've talked about in a number of broadcasts, including AFA program number 14. We came back to it in a big way in AFA program number 21 as well. We've also looked at it in AFA program number 549. Now, later on in this broadcast, we're going to touch once again on the subject of the UNPO, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, a wonderful-sounding organization which champions the rights of small, downtrodden ethnic groups around the world, except that this wonderful, charitable-sounding organization is headed up by none other than Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the House of Habsburg, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And the organization really appears to be an organization, the UNPO, that is, that champions the rights of small, relatively underprivileged or outright downtrodden ethnic groups in order to use them as levers to break up larger states, and in particular to permit access to the natural resources of larger states. We're going to come back to that and the whole issue of the use of ethnic groups, and in particular ethnic groups with a history of oppression and abuse, in order to basically do something that is oppressive and abusive. Because it's a really Machiavellian and very, very successful technique. Not a new one, but it's one that, like anti-Semitism, is once again experiencing something of a resurgence. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. One thing that's very interesting to me, interesting not in a pleasant sense, but it is very interesting to me to see much of the so-called progressive sector in this country at this point in time reflecting a dynamic that is characteristic of the onset of fascism in a society, and namely when the elements, significant elements of the so-called progressive sector begin manifesting relatively overt fascism, although not recognizing it as such. Indeed, terming anti-Semitism the socialism of fools was very insightful by that European social critic. Much of the contemporary so-called progressive sector in the United States is succumbing to some more or less overt Nazi-style anti-Semitism, but secreted within, on the one hand, or really not, they're not opposed, but secreted to a certain extent within, quote, anti-Zionism. And also secreted within the so-called 911 truth movement. A blog, which again which will be fully annotated in the description for the record 617, talks about a peace group in Oregon called the Pacifica Forum, not related to the Pacifica Radio Network, although it should be said that the Pacifica Radio Network has been quite susceptible in recent months and recent years to exactly this sort of thing. But this particular forum is staging a Holocaust denial conference or seminar on the anniversary of Kristallnacht. The Kristallnacht, or Night of Glass, November 9th, 1938, was the first large-scale organized Nazi pogrom against the Jews and is something of an historical landmark in the growth and implementation of Nazi anti-Semitism and genocide against the Jews and later others. One of the key people in this particular event in the Pacifica Forum seminar that was being held here is a fellow who was a contributor to a number of internet sites, including Counterpunch, which is the internet magazine of Alexander Coburn, something of a luminary in the so-called progressive sector in the United States. It's why, basically, I use the term so-called progressive sector. It is the ease with which they accommodate themselves with things like the following. Talk about the socialism of fools. From a blog spot run by one Adam Holland, the Thursday, November 1st of 2007, Oregon Peace Group to mark Kristallnacht with Holocaust Denial Conference. The author writes, "Here's another story concerning what appears to be a trend. Purported peace activists," unquote, "promoting Holocaust denial and anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. In this case, a University of Oregon peace organization called Pacifica Forum, which was founded and is led by a retired professor and a retired administrator from that university, is marking Kristallnacht with 2 days of speeches and conferences this week conducted by Mark Weber, director of the Holocaust Denial Group Institute for Historical Review. Weber, the former editor of the National Vanguard, the main publication of the neo-Nazi National Alliance Party, has spent the past 30 years as a professional advocate of Holocaust denial and anti-Semitism. His opening lecture on Friday is entitled Free Speech versus Zionist Power, unquote. Advertisements for the event feature the image of a snake in the shape of a Star of David with a legend, "The Israel Lobby, how powerful is it?" unquote. November 9th marks the 69th anniversary of Kristallnacht, which is considered by many historians to be the beginning of the Holocaust. In 2006, the Pacifica Forum sponsored multiple talks by Valdez Analauskas. Analauskas, who was born in Lithuania, is an author and internet journalist who calls himself a white separatist and racialist, in his affiliation and has affiliations on both the far left and the far right. In an email to a reporter for the Eugene, Oregon Register Guard, he stated, quote, "I believe people have to live among their own kind. I feel no supremacy. I just want to be separate and live in my own environment," unquote. In October of 2006, Analauskas gave a lecture on Zionism and Russia, unquote, in which he blamed Jews for the Bolshevik Revolution, calling them the greatest killing machine in history, unquote, and stating that American Jews suppressed dissemination of this information through their control of academia and the media. He dedicated this lecture to Holocaust denial Germar Rudolph. During a question and answer period, Aviva Saenz called Analauskas' lecture anti-Jewish garbage in a tradition that has lasted for centuries, unquote. His talk, she told him, is in the tradition of Hitler's Mein Kampf. "There's a lot of truth in Mein Kampf," Analauskas responded. Afterward, Pacifica Forum co-leader Orval Etter said he was unable to say, unquote, if Analauskas' lecture could be considered anti-Semitic. Analauskas is a friend and supporter of Ward Churchill, who assisted Analauskas with his book Discovering America as It Is. He has endorsed in print Churchill's statement calling 911 victims little Eichmanns, going so far as to use the same phrase with respect to the administration of the University of Oregon when they rescinded an invitation for Churchill to lecture there. By the way, America as it is has been endorsed by Howard Zinn, David G. Gill, and Ward Churchill. The founders and leaders of Pacifica Forum are Orville Etter and George Beres, B-E-R-E-S. Beres, who was the manager of the UO University of Oregon Speakers Bureau and was University of Oregon Sports Information Director, has retired from those positions and is currently a columnist for a number of internet publications, including Counterpunch, and is a member of the Oregon Interreligious Committee for Peace in the Middle East. Just 2 days ago, a pro-free speech piece he authored was published on the anti-Semitic Zyopedia.com. What is interesting, I mean, anybody past a point can print just about anything, but what is interesting here is to see a fellow like this basically being one of the founders of the Pacifica Forum. And this is a fellow who is contributing to, among other publications, Counterpunch. And I bring this up because this is actually something of a trend. The ease with which relatively overt fascist and anti-Semitic material has managed to infiltrate into the so-called progressive sector. I suppose, on the one hand, it's quite remarkable. On the other hand, it is absolutely to be expected by a knowledgeable observer of and analyst of fascism, because that is one of the things that is characteristic of the early stages in the onset of fascism. Indeed, one of the early elements of the Nazi Party was the Strasser wing of the Nazi Party. These were disaffected leftists who basically sought to redistribute wealth from the Jews, of course, the international Jews who controlled the wealth. Eventually, after they helped the rest of the brown shirts, and the Strassers provided a significant element of the brown shirts, or the Strasserite wing of the Nazi Party provided a significant element of the brown shirts. Ultimately, on the night of the Long Knives, the Strasserite wing of the Nazi Party was liquidated. And so ultimately, that turned out, in this case, to be the socialism of fools, indeed. But take note of the presence of people like Mr. Beres in progressive forums, Pacifica Forum or otherwise, and take a look at them organizing Holocaust denial conferences on the anniversary of Kristallnacht. Again, a phenomenon to be noted. Something else I want to note, too, is the ease with which certain other types of far-right and fascist activists and ideology have been able to find common cause with elements who, at least to a certain extent, could be considered progressive, or I always use, quote, progressive, unquote. An interesting example of strange political bedfellows concerns some networking between would-be secessionists, some from Vermont and others from the Deep South, and the sort of whitewashing, and there's a pun intended, of the deep racism of the League of the South, who comprise much of the Southern secessionist contingent here, by the Northern contingent, the Vermont Yankees, so to speak, is worth noting. This is an AP story from Wednesday, October 3rd of 2007. It's Dateline Chattanooga, Tennessee. Headline, Southern Secessionists Welcome Yankees to Convention. It reads, in an unlikely marriage of desire to secede from the United States, two advocacy groups from opposite political traditions, New England and the South, are sitting down to talk. Tired of foreign wars and what they consider right-wing courts, the Middlebury Institute wants liberal states like Vermont to be able to secede peacefully. That sounds just fine to the League of the South, a conservative group that refuses to give up on Southern independence. We believe that an independent South or Hawaii, Alaska, or Vermont would be better able to serve the interest of everybody, regardless of race or ethnicity, said Michael Kill of Killen, Alabama, president of the League of the South. Separated by hundreds of miles and divergent political philosophies, the Middlebury Institute and the League of the South are hosting a 2-day secessionist convention starting Wednesday in Chattanooga. They expect to attract supporters from California, Alaska, and Hawaii, inviting anyone who wants to dissolve the union so states can save themselves from an overbearing federal government. And still later. If allowed to go their own way, New Englanders, quote, would probably allow abortion and have gun control, unquote, Hill said, while Southerners, quote, would probably crack down on illegal immigration harder than it is being now. And the statements later by some of the Vermont secessionists, both the people from the Middlebury Institute and people advocating something called the Second Vermont Republic, show a shocking degree of naivete about the League of the South. The Middlebury Institute has a director named Kirkpatrick Sale, and he basically said that, quote, it bothers me that people have been wrong and declared them, people have wrongly declared them to be racists, unquote, Sale said. The League of the South says it is not racist, but proudly displays a Confederate battle flag on its banner. And again, Sale said of the League of the South, it has not done anything or said anything racist in its 14 years of existence, and says of the Southern Poverty Law Center, they call everybody racist. Well, in fact, the League of the South is racist. It is a neo-Confederate organization, and we'll put a reference in the description for this program for a broadcast in which we cover not only its link, surprise, surprise, to white supremacist groups, but also its links to people involved in helping to perpetuate the myth that James Earl Ray was the lone nut assassin of Martin Luther King. It was about, for the record, program 191, or right about at that time. But that reference will be in the description, too, for the record program number 617. Note again that this weird secessionist conference, basically lumping together relatively far-left Yankees or extremely liberal rural Yankees from Vermont who basically want to secede because the United States is too far to the right, and neo-Confederates hooking up together. Note also that among the elements that were expected to join this conference were people from Alaska and Hawaii. One of the things that we're going to touch on inside two of this program is the UNPO and something that I call the Splendid Blonde Beast, and one of the reasons why the Splendid Blonde Beast is something that all nations must take into account, because ultimately it is one of the things that can be both used to justify and put into effect conquest, and then ultimately, many years later, to help break up the conqueror. This, however, concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 617, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on November 4th of 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.